はい。Now my words this morning, I'll be kind of looking at all three of the selections from the Bible Companion reading chart. For my opening reading, to really start focusing in on my subject, I would like to read Daniel chapter 3, verses 16 through 18. So Daniel chapter 3, starting at verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this matter. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O king. But if not, be it known unto thee, O king, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. And so I have entitled my thoughts today, Examples for Our Heritage. As I've said, my readings were taken, this reading was taken from a portion of today's assigned readings. The example of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace, of course, is a great example of unwavering faithfulness. But the other readings on the chart for today bring up some interesting points in relation both to their faith and to the lessons for us. Well, first, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, their original Jewish names, young noblemen of Judah, carried away captive into Babylon in one of Nebuchadnezzar's campaigns against Jerusalem. Now, so many of Judah's nobles, leadership, and subsequently the general population, had been sinful. And for that, God allowed their deportation as a punishment. So they all lost everything. And in the Babylonian capital, these young noblemen were even deprived of their ability to have children. Which is interesting when you think about it. They most likely were literally circumcised, and should have been circumcised in heart also. And because many were not, they were taken away, and the literal cutting off of the flesh taken a step further to deny them any fleshly lineage to perpetuate their unacceptable leadership in future generations. But as for these three individuals that we just read about here, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and their friend Daniel, of course, whatever their character before their captivity, they certainly show an unwavering faith afterward, as we find throughout the book of Daniel. Now, their example of faith is even more impressive considering their background of the wayward lineage of David and Solomon. Solomon himself was turned aside by the indulgence of his influence. especially pointedly by his wives that he took so many of. And most of his sovereign successors followed similar evil paths. Even the few righteous kings of Judah made mistakes, as everyone does. But some of them were very grave ones, to the detriment of their families and subjects, not very much so, as we find in the reading plan's Old Testament portion parallel to Daniel chapter 3, which of course is in 2 Chronicles 21 and 22. In those two chapters, we see two of Solomon's successors falling prey to the same evil influence that broke through Solomon's faith. Influence of foreign women, or a woman specifically in their case. So let's look at 2 Chronicles chapter 21. Chronicles 21, verses 5 and 6. Jehoram was 32 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 8 years in Jerusalem. And he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, like as did the house of Ahab. For he had the daughter of Ahab, the wife, and he wrought that which was evil in the eyes of Yahweh. And then again in 2 Chronicles 22, verses 2 and 3. Years old was Ahaziah when he began to reign, and he reigned 1 year in Jerusalem. His mother's name also was Athaliah, the daughter of Omri. He also walked in the ways of the house of Ahab, for his mother was his counselor to do wickedly. This was the one and the same woman. Now, for a little background, going back to Jehoram, in chapter 21, he was the son of Jehoshaphat, who was a faithful man who did a lot of good. Just for example, we could turn back. 2 Chronicles 17, verse 3, where it says, "And Yahweh was with Jehoshaphat, because he walked in the first ways of his father David." And as the margin points out, we should add the word "and" there. First ways of his father and of David, and sought not unto Baal. His own father, Asa, had started out good and then had fallen away to evil. But he followed the first example of his father and of his great-great-grandfather, David. And he put great effort into it. In the same chapter 17, verses 7 through 9, says, "Also in the third year of his reign, he sent to his princes, even to Ben-Hail, and to Obadiah, and to Zechariah, and to Nethaneel, and to Micaiah, teach in the cities of Judah. And with them he sent Levites, even Shemaiah, and Nethaniah, and Zebadiah, and Asahel, and Shemiramoth, and Jehonathan, and Adonijah, and Tobijah, and Tobadonijah, Levites, and with them Elishama and Jehoram, priests. And they taught in Judah, and had the book of the law of Yahweh with them, and went throughout all the cities of Judah and taught people. He also showed great faith in the face of great challenges. And so in 2 Chronicles 20, verses 2 and 3, we read, "Then there came some that told Jehoshaphat, saying, There cometh a great multitude against them from beyond the sea, on this side Syria. Behold, they be in Hazazon Tamar, which is in Gedi. And Jehoshaphat feared and set himself to seek Yahweh, and proclaimed a fast throughout all Judah." He initially rejected an alliance with the wicked king of Israel. That's in 1 Kings 22:49. Read, "Didn't said Ahaziah the son of Ahab unto Jehoshaphat, Let my servants go with thy servants in the ships, but Jehoshaphat would not." But as the daily reading in 2 Chronicles 21 and 22 mentioned, he eventually had his son Jehoram marry into that evil family, capitulating the offers of those wicked kings. So in 2 Chronicles 18, verse 1, we find, "Now Jehoshaphat had riches and honor in abundance, and joined affinity with Ahab." And as has been pointed out before, that word affinity is translated from a Hebrew word with strong implications of some kind of matrimonial relationship. It's more often translated, explicitly so, and also often translated son-in-law or father-in-law. Now Jehoshaphat was reprimanded and punished for this and seems to have taken that well. But the result in the successive generations of this wavering were disastrous, accumulating in the genocide of the seed royal by that evil foreign woman imported erroneously by the otherwise mostly good Jehoshaphat. And of course, that's in today's reading from the chart, 2 Chronicles 22, verses 10 and 11, which read, "But when Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, saw that her son was dead, she arose and destroyed all the seed royal from the house of Judah. But Jehoshabeth, the daughter of the king, took Joash, the son of Ahaziah, and stole him from among the king's sons that were slain, and put him and his nurse in a bedchamber. So Jehoshabeth, the daughter of King Jehoram, the wife of Jehoiada the priest, for she was the sister of Ahaziah, hid him from Athaliah so that she slew him not." we see the results even multiple generations later of this disastrous mistake by Jehoshaphat. And this is why God says he will visit the iniquity of the fathers upon the children unto the third and fourth generation of them that hate him. In Exodus 20, verse 5, and the same thing is also in Exodus 34, 7 and Numbers 14, 18. And it's not that God holds anyone personally responsible for their ancestors' sins, but we all really tend to follow after our parents' examples in some form or another, pretty universally. And it's both from nature and nurture. We could genetically inherit certain tendencies, and we learn a lot from watching our parents in our formative years. So whatever our weaknesses or failings, as the example left us in the book of Daniel, such as our opening reading, we must watch out to resist compromising situations that could encourage others to further labor, and always say, as they did, that whatever the outcome, God's will be done. And even in this, we must bear with patience and walk circumspectly. Which brings us to the New Testament reading on the chart for today, parallel to these. That is Acts chapter 1. Now in Acts chapter 1, let's read verses 6 through 8. We know that they had been with Christ after his resurrection. Now it was 40 days later. John 21, they had had the miraculous catch of fishes, and everything Christ had said to them. So Acts 1, verses 6 through 8. When they therefore were come together, they asked of him, saying, Lord, wilt thou at this time restore again the kingdom to Israel? And he said unto them, it is not for you to know the times or the seasons which the Father hath put in his own power. But ye shall receive power after that the Holy Spirit is come upon you, and ye shall be witnesses unto me, both in Jerusalem and in all Judea and in Samaria and unto the uttermost part of the earth. I think we could say that at this time the apostles had great faith, especially after the troubling days around Christ's crucifixion, and they had a correct understanding of God's will and ultimate goal. But of course they did not understand the timing of his plan, or the true conflict involved. That second idea, the conflict against sin, they would soon fully comprehend as evidenced in their subsequent preaching and writings. But the exact timing of future events is usually not for any mortal to know. So their question here shows their faith, and perhaps we can overlook their zealous impetuousness and short-sightedness as riding the wave of euphoria over their beloved master's resurrection and return to them. So maybe we can take this as a warning as to how our example might affect others inadvertently when compared with scriptures such as Titus. Look in Titus chapter 3. Verses 8 and 9. This is a faithful saying, from these things I will, but thou affirm constantly, that they which have believed in God might be careful to maintain good works. These things are good and profitable unto men. But avoid foolish questions and genealogies and contentions and strivings about the law, for they are unprofitable and vain. James chapter 1, verse 19. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath. Let's look at Proverbs 10, verse 19. Proverbs 10, 19 says, in the multitude of words there wanteth not sin, but he that refraineth his lips is wise. But along with that, I think we need to consider Proverbs 17:27. As he that hath knowledge spareth his words, and a man of understanding is of an excellent spirit. And then let's look at Proverbs 2, verse 11. As discretion shall preserve thee, understanding shall keep thee. Now back in Acts chapter 1, on the other side of the conversation, we see Christ's perfect example. Verses 7 and 8. Gently steering them away from their misplaced focus and back toward the intervening mission. We can think of them like children on a long trip asking, are we there yet? Are we there yet? We also must learn to appreciate what God has provided for our nurture and admonition and development. Seeing the wondrous beauty in all, no matter how unsettling, remembering that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are called according to his purpose, of course, from Romans 8:28. After hearing Christ's answer and witnessing his ascension into heaven and hearing the angels' words in Acts 1:11 that we all know so well, they gladly engaged in their mission as they could setting up and maintaining the core first century, or first, very first ecclesia, as the rest of Acts chapter 1 relates. And so, as we await the next phase of God's plan, let us devote ourselves to faithfulness without wavering, and let us consider one another to provoke unto love and the good works. One way, by really trying to set good examples, that everyone that hath forsaken houses or brethren or sisters or father or mother or wife or children or lands for my name's sake shall receive 100-fold and shall inherit everlasting life, as Christ says in Matthew 19:29. Well, now as we consider the ultimate example of Christ's sacrifice, we will enter into our memorial service. The Orlando Ecclesia's basis of fellowship is exclusively